Hey there, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Jessica, and this is All Things Sensory by Harkla. Together, we're on a mission to help children, families, therapists, and educators live happy, healthy lives.
We dive into all things sensory, special needs, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, and so much more. In each episode, we share raw, honest, fun ideas and strategies for everyone to implement into daily life.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, really, really, really quick, before we get into today's amazing episode, we want to talk about some things that we have coming up.
We're going to be honest, it has been a very hard year to stay in stock as a small business.
So whether you've heard the news or not, supply chains have been crazy this year, and Harkla has definitely been affected by this.
We do have some very exciting news to share with you today. We have all of our products finally back in stock, heading into the biggest sale that we do every year, which is our Black Friday and Cyber Monday sale.
So if you want to make sure that you get the Harkla product that you've had your eye on, we recommend getting on our early deals list ASAP.
So to do so, you are going to head to harkla.co/early to sign up and make sure that you're on the list so you are one of the first ones to know when Harkla's holiday sales go live so you can save money on your favorite sensory products.
With how much we've been out of stock this entire year, we just want to remind you that the early bird gets the worm this holiday season, so you want to be on this list so you know when these sales are live.
Yes. Okay, one last time, head to harkla.co/early. That's harkla.co/early.
Okay, now we can get to today's episode.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another exciting, bubbly, fun episode. This is All Things Sensory by Harkla. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Jessica. And we are going to introduce you to Lori. And we are going to talk about dyslexia, but we're also going to talk about some other things.
This is one of those episodes that I wish you could see it. I wish that we could share our Zoom recording with you because it was just funny. It was funny. It was entertaining. We had a great time. We hope you'll enjoy that and you'll feel that in this episode as well.
Yep. Make sure after you're done listening that you take a screenshot and share it on social media and tag us. And also make sure that you go soak up all of Lori's resources when we're all done.
Let's meet Lori. Hello, Lori. How are you today?
I am great. Thank you. I'm excited to be here with you guys.
We're excited to have you. And every interview, we start with five secret questions. So we're coming in hot at you.
All right. Let's do it.
Okay. The first question, would you rather give up AC and heat in your house for the rest of your life or give up internet for the rest of your life?
I would rather give up internet, but that's like loving on my husband a lot because I make my living online, so I'm like trusting him to pay the AC and heat bill. Right?
Yes.
I'm just relinquishing all responsibilities for any kind of professional life, and I'm just gonna live in silent bliss.
Right? That sounds terrible.
I know.
That's fair.
All I can see is a lot of reading in my future. That sounds really exciting.
Okay.
And I'll be cozy when I do it.
Exactly. You won't be miserable.
That was a good one.
Oh, shoot.
Okay. Next question. What is your favorite type of dessert?
Cheesecake.
Like just plain cheesecake?
Cheesecake with a huge drizzle. Not really a drizzle. It would kind of be more of a glop of caramel.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah. No drizzling here. No drizzling.
Awesome.
I love it. Okay. What famous person would you like to have dinner with?
Oh, that's a tough one because, like, do you go for just the, you know, it would probably be Bruce Springsteen.
Oh.
Why?
Well, because he's kind of been the love of my life for about 35 years or so. I am convinced that the reason he still tours is because he's out there looking for me. And so I think I would like to, he's getting older.
Yeah.
And I would like to make his life a little bit easier and just let him find me.
So you're so thoughtful.
He will find you. Maybe everyone who listens to this can spread the word. And so he can find you this way too.
I feel like I'm being generous in that way. Right. I'm trying to take some of the pressure off myself.
I like it.
So notice I'm putting the pressure on my husband and taking it off Bruce.
Yeah, of course. I'd expect nothing less. Yeah. Oh no.
I think it's great.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. That was awesome.
Okay. Next question is, would you rather have 14 giraffes or 14 elephants?
I think giraffes.
Yeah, why?
I think the giraffe. Well, because we live on a farm and we're surrounded by trees and mountains. And first of all, I think they would have a beautiful view of the mountains behind our house. I don't necessarily feel a need to ride either one, so I think the giraffe would probably be a little easier. But I could just see their long neck, like looking over the trees at the mountains in the background.
Yes. Oh, right? No.
So,
I love it. Giraffes are my favorite animal, so that'd be my dream come true.
Well, there you go. And I love that it's 14, not 13 or 15.
No.
14. That's a good number.
Right. Nothing against elephants, but yeah.
Giraffes would be fun.
Join the giraffes today.
Yes. Okay. Our last question that we ask everyone, what is your sensory quirk?
My sensory quirk is that I cannot sleep without a weighted blanket.
Oh, okay.
To the point where when I travel, I can't take a weighted blanket, but I do take an extra blanket because I feel like there's never enough blankets on the hotel bed.
Okay. Yes.
Wait, I have to have a really heavy pillow and really heavy blankets on top of me.
Why can't you take your weighted blanket with you?
Because it would be most of my baggage.
Well, no, you just carry it, like just by itself, right?
Put it on your carry-on?
Yeah, you take it on the plane.
I just loop it over my shoulders and go.
Yeah.
I know. Do you think it would go off through the...
Yeah. I've taken weighted stuff through there, and they're like, what the heck is this? But a weighted blanket would probably work. How heavy is it?
It's 20 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's... Yeah.
That's a commitment.
Like, I want to be covered in it at night and not be able to move it. Right. I just
want to
lay there till
dawn. I love it. Oh my gosh. That's so good.
It's great.
So that, good.
That's my first deal. I have a really, really heavy pillow and a really, really heavy pillow.
Were you a poor sleeper when you were a kid because you didn't have enough weight?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
I don't remember it ever being a problem. I just remember one year, a couple Christmases ago, I got weighted blankets for all my kids for Christmas. And got myself one, and it was like there was just no going back.
Night and day difference.
And then we have two dogs, and one of the dogs obviously has the same sensory quirk.
Oh.
Because she will literally take a running start from the other side of the room. She will jump on the bed. She slams herself into me, and then she doesn't move for the night.
Oh.
So she waits until I'm just all settled and the weighted blanket is up, and then she just comes and she does this like, hard, forceful slam up against my foot. Yeah.
That's
so
funny.
And she doesn't move. And so then we move for the rest of the time.
Nope, you're stuck.
Just lying there in your straight jacket.
Yep. So that's why I know she's my girl.
Man. So good. Okay. Well, now that everyone knows your deepest, darkest secrets. We are talking about dyslexia today. That's what we're focusing on. But we want our audience to know about you, who you are, what you do, why you do it, all those things.
So I'm a very, very happy wife. I'm the incredibly proud mom, three adult sons. My oldest, who is getting married in 2 weeks, to like the most amazing girl. So aww. I just have to say, if you are an all-boy mom, and your kid is smart enough to pick like the girl of your dreams, like you raised him right.
Yes.
So my professional background is special education. So I taught in the public schools for a few years and some time off to do the mom thing. I worked in early intervention and special needs preschool for a lot of years. I went into private practice. So at that point I was working with kids pretty intensively one-on-one, doing a lot of like the intensive reading remediation, kind of like we're going going to be talking about today, and then was fortunate enough to kind of get into the world of doing professional developments and staff development and those kinds of things. So, and I also am the mom of a child with dyslexia and dysgraphia. And we actually, a lot of my real passion for dyslexia, dysgraphia, those types of challenges for kids is just coming from up close and personal. Mm-hmm. And seeing it from both sides, I've always said I've sat on both sides of the assessment process, and I've sat on both sides of an IEP table. I've sat on both sides of the homework battles, so I kind of get it firsthand.
Yeah.
Both the frustration, but also just the tremendous opportunities that are out there for our kids to make it easier for them.
I think it makes you better at what you do, having that experience in your back pocket as well, having both sides in your back pocket.
I definitely think so. Yeah, I think there's a certain understanding. I think there's a certain compassion. And then I also think because my son's older, right, he's an adult now and living a happy, fulfilling life, that I think it's nice to be able to hold that end goal in a very concrete way in my brain. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We're going to get you where you want to go. We're just going to get there a different way. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. I like that idea of we're going to get there. We're just going to go a different route.
Yeah. I mean, that's quite as easy as everybody else's, but it's going to be a good one. It's going to be a good one. And you're going to get there.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So talking about dyslexia, can you explain what dyslexia is and what it looks like, how it manifests?
Yes. So I will say that dyslexia is a disorder of reading, but not all reading disorders are dyslexia. Okay. What makes dyslexia kind of its own unique category or subcategory of reading disorders is that our kids with dyslexia tend to have average to above average IQs, and it is a reading difficulty that exists in spite of everything else seeming to be moving the way it should move. So it doesn't exist because there's a cognitive delay. It doesn't exist because there's another condition such as autism. It doesn't exist because the child didn't have enough reading at home. You know, these are the kids where we feel like everything really should be lining up and it just doesn't. They've had consistent instruction, consistent exposure, they have the pre-academic skills, they're ready to go, and yet it still doesn't stick. The phonemic awareness, the decoding, the encoding, and then the fluency, which is once we can sound out words, can we read them quickly?
Well,
and all of that is much more difficult than you would expect.
Yeah, and case in point here, you specialize in this, and your son still has these challenges. So clearly, it's not a parenting issue or an environmental issue.
Yeah, yes. I mean, there was no shortage of books in our home.
Yeah.
Let me assure you.
Absolutely.
As a teacher, yeah. Our replay. Yeah. You know.
Oh, yeah.
You're an OT with your little boy.
Yeah, for sure.
So then, is it related to the visual system? Is it how the visual system connects to the brain and sees those letters? Like, how does that work?
Well, it is predominantly considered what we call a neurodevelopmental condition, which means it is a brain-based condition. It exists outside of typical development. So that's basically what all that means. It is predominantly a breakdown in the auditory processing center in what we call phonemic awareness. And phonemic awareness are the skills that we have even before we begin to read. So they're all of those kind of language organization skills. Like, can you hear that two words rhyme? Can you hear that two words are different? Can you hear how many syllables or how many, you know, parts are in a word? Balloon, you know, those kinds of things. Things before kids even begin learning that this is A and it is A.
Yeah.
And so that's where the foundation of breakdown is.
Gotcha. My question, who is at risk? Is it genetic? If I have it, is my kiddo going to have it? Is there any way of preventing it if it is genetic?
So let me kind of try to get those in order.
Thank you.
There is a very strong genetic link to dyslexia. You certainly can have it if a parent does not, but there is a genetic link. Neither of my son's parents have dyslexia. However, he has some cousins who do. So there's something in that side of the family where it exists. You know, it's estimated that anywhere from like 40 to 60% of it is genetic, which is quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's quite a bit. If there is a family history, the likelihood is much greater. If there's a sibling, there's an older sibling. So let's say maybe you have a child in kindergarten, you're wondering about it, but they already have a third grader who's been diagnosed. The likelihood is we're going to act as it. Mm-hmm. Can we prevent it? No, not really, but we can certainly mitigate, right? Yeah. So we can certainly, you know, with everything, right? With everything. The earlier we identify it, the more we address it, the more specifically we address it, and the better opportunities are. What we want to do is we want to close the gap. We don't want to give kids as much support as early as we can and kind of go from there.
Okay. So then how early can a child be diagnosed with dyslexia?
That's going to vary. I would say there's two different parts to that question. How early can they be and how early will they be?
Okay.
Okay. A lot of times people evaluating will not want to diagnose a child with dyslexia until third grade or older. That's kind of an old school way of thinking. The old school way of thinking about reading is that we're going to give kids through second grade, because through second grade, we're really teaching kids to read. And then from third grade on, we're really expecting kids to read for the purpose of learning, kind of thing. So there's a switch that happens there. So there's very much this old school mentality that not until third grade do we test. That is a huge fallacy. That is a huge fallacy. If anybody tells you that your child cannot be evaluated prior to third grade and you are a parent, basically all you have to do is write a letter and say you request the evaluation. How early can you be diagnosed? I think you can vary. In a lot of kids, you can very clearly see signs and symptoms in preschool. I've always said I could walk into a preschool classroom and I would be able, within 30 minutes, to be able to identify who was at risk. Doesn't mean it was going to come into that, but who's at risk.
Okay. So we're talking like ages as young as like three or four.
Three or four. Yeah. And some of those really early things to look for.
That was my question. Yeah. I'm like, tell me what to look for. Yeah. Yes. How do we know?
No, sorry. One of the biggest ones is rhyming.
Oh.
Really, that's one of the biggest indicators, is when children have difficulty rhyming past the age when kids have to catch on to what rhyming is, but still not being able to catch on to that. Not being able to remember the words to songs that they're very familiar with. So let's say you have a child in the preschool and 3, 4, 5 times a day they sing a cleanup song. And it's Christmas time and that child still doesn't know the words to the cleanup song. Mm. That's because that's auditory sequencing, right? The ability to learn words to a song has to do with language being in a sequence, in a predictable order, and that's what reading is. Mm-hmm. That's a big one. If you have kids who have speech and language delays, increased risk. Mm-hmm. If you have kids with chronic ear infections, increased risk, not because dyslexia is a hearing disorder in any way, but if the child's hearing is so muffled that they're not being able to process sounds accurately, it impacts their ability to learn. You know, just kind of as a side note, my son who has dyslexia had his first ear infection at 10 days old. The pediatrician hadn't even seen anything. By the time he was in preschool, he'd already had 3 sets. So chronic. But by the time he was in preschool, he could tell me whether he was having a good ear day or a bad ear day, and that meant whether he could hear me clearly or not. And that's just from fluid. That is not a permanent hearing loss at all. That is just because for some kids, it's that muffled. That's a huge watch right? That's one that you really want to watch and see and make sure that it's a language, chronic ear infection, sinus infections, those types of things. And then rhyming and learning words to songs, to familiar songs. Those are some big ones.
Okay, so I have two questions. My first question is, a lot of these like signs or symptoms that you're talking about are very similar to auditory processing disorder. And so is there a connection, or does that often get misdiagnosed?
I would say probably the one that gets overlooked is the auditory processing part. Mm-hmm. I think because we are so academic progress oriented in our school systems, and there's now so many benchmarks for reading, I think reading would probably get caught before that. There's a very fine line between the auditory processing part and the phonemic awareness part. So is it a delay? Is it a disorder processing? That's really where your audiologist comes in and kind of unwinds that.
Okay. So then is there a connection? Like if a child has auditory processing disorder, are they going to be more likely to also have dyslexia and vice versa?
Yes. Any type of language disorder, like, and I consider that a language processing condition, you should be on the watch list.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And I will say, I had mentioned earlier that, you know, kind of it was that old school mentality of not until third grade. We're making a lot of progress. We're making a lot of progress in that area. Almost every state now has a mandatory screening for dyslexia in second grade, and about half of them have a mandatory screening in kindergarten.
Oh, nice.
So we are finally, as a nation, realizing how much that it's not about whether or not you can read, it's do you have the skills foundational mm-hmm. to learn to read? And that's what it comes down to.
Perfect. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
Woohoo.
Doing something right.
We're getting there. Now we just need sensory.
I know.
We're working on that. Don't worry.
Okay. We just wanted to take a minute and talk to you about our company, Harkla. Our mission at Harkla is to help those with special needs live happy and healthy lives. Not only do we work to accomplish this through the podcast, but we also have therapy products, digital courses, and a ton of free resources on YouTube and our website to try to bring holistic care to you and your family. Listeners of the All Things Sensory podcast get 10% off their first purchase at Harkla with the discount code SENSORY. We would highly recommend checking out some of our best sellers like the compression sensory swing, the weighted blankets, and of course, our course on sensory diets and primitive reflexes.
The cool thing is that 1% of each sale gets donated to the University of Washington Autism Center to support autism research and fund scholarships for families in need to receive in-clinic therapy for their children.
Learn more about Harkla and all we have to offer at harkla.co, that's harkla.co, and use the code SENSORY to get 10% off your first purchase. That's SENSORY for 10% off.
And don't forget that all Harkla orders come with a lifetime guarantee and free shipping.
All right, let's get back to the show.
My other question was, before I really learned about dyslexia and understanding what it was, I was under the impression, and I wonder if other people are under this impression as well, like dyslexia is like kids who can't read and their letters are backwards, right? And they get their B's and D's mixed up all the time, and that means they have dyslexia. Can you talk about that a little bit?
There are a lot of reasons why some of the things that happen in the dyslexic brain happen. So just to kind of give you a little mini brain lesson, and I think this helps a lot of things make a lot of sense. If you could look at your brain and you could divide it right in half, you have two halves or hemispheres, okay? And if we were going to just be really oversimplifying it, we tend to think about the left half of our brain as primarily handling language, and the right half of our brain primarily handling visual, spatial, those kinds of things. Now, for all of us, for everybody, when we begin to learn to read, reading begins as a right hemisphere activity. And think about a baby who has no language, but you're looking at a board book. and you're pointing and you're saying ball, 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 right? So it begins with pictures. It begins by looking and matching sounds with looking. Once we begin teaching kids, you know, phonics, basically, this is a ball, it's a ball. Once we start really working on those sound associations, reading shifts to the left hemisphere, and that's where it hangs out because it's primarily a language task. There is a tremendous body of research and really some phenomenal brain scans that can show us exactly what happens. But for individuals with dyslexia, reading never really leaves the right hemisphere. Oh. It stays predominantly a right brain task. So where a typical fourth grade reader is reading based on sounding out words and making them make sense, the dyslexic reader is reading based on what it looks like and what fits the general context. Mm-hmm. So that's why our kids with dyslexia do a lot of guessing. That's why our kids with dyslexia skip over a lot of words like and, of, the, because those aren't words that have any imagery attached to them, right? So they're going to skip the and they're going to go to barn because they can see what a barn is. So we're very heavy on the visual. Another thing that the right hemisphere, the visual hemisphere, is really good at is most of us are very good at spotting differences. Most of our brains are, we identify spotting differences. And that goes back to the caveman days where, you know, a rustle in the bush meant that a jaguar was there or whatever. The dyslexic brain, because it works primarily from the opposite hemisphere, is very good at spotting similarities. So it really focuses on what's the same. So if you think about that, that describes a lot of reverses for you. Because a typical brain can see that like a B, a D, and a P, and a Q are all faced in different directions. A dyslexic brain, which is wired to spot similarities, sees that they're all stick and ball letters, and orientation is basically optional. So it can see W-A-S and S-A-W, and what their brain sees is that they're the same. What a typical brain sees is that they're different. They're in opposite orders. That's the underpinning of where a lot of those reversals, the flipping comes from, sometimes that mirror writing, sometimes the replacing words for another word that kind of looks like it but makes no sense to the story. It's because it kind of looked like it, right? It looked like it. It was a similarity.
That makes sense. I'm just thinking of so many examples of all of those. And I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
But also, just because a kiddo reverses their letters or says them backwards, it doesn't necessarily mean that they have dyslexia.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the whole letter reversal thing is considered typical through the end of second grade, right? Mm-hmm. That's a long time to give kids practice to get things right in their brain, right? Mm-hmm. So it is absolutely, I hate the word normal, but it's absolutely within normal childhood development to see some letter reversals, an occasional number reversal, you know, at Christmas of the second grade. What is not as typical is to see them happening regularly, pretty constantly. You're not ever really seeing them done the correct way, those types of things. So while that reversal isn't believed to be so much a, you know, like a vision issue in terms of acuity, you know, visual acuity is whether or not you need glasses, right? It's whether or not you have clear vision. There can definitely be visual processing to that, you know, with form constancy and with orientation and with figure ground and a lot of those extra areas. So when we're also working on building up those early phonic skills for kids, we should definitely be looking at how are they processing things visually as well.
I was just thinking when you were talking about second grade, so my son is in second grade right now. And he still reverses a couple of numbers every once in a while. I think he's got his letters mostly down, but I'm bragging on him a little bit. He's a really great reader. Mm-hmm. And so I was always like, you know what? He reads really, really well. Every once in a while, he reverses something. I think he's okay.
Yes. Yes. Right. Is that is everything else on track? Mm-hmm. Does this just happen every now and then?
Yeah.
He's just a
second. Yeah, probably was in a rush or something.
He's a little bit of a seeker, so he goes kind of fast, you know?
Yeah.
Those are great examples. I like it.
That's helpful.
Yes. Okay, so I put this question in here. I just added it, so it's not in our outline.
It's a secret question.
It's a secret question just because. I know. I'm just coming at you. So I took a continuing ed course that was about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and their relationship to primitive reflexes. And so I was just wondering if you had any background with primitive reflexes and dyslexia and the connection there.
I do not. I would love to hear what your takeaway from that was. Like, I would like to learn. I would like to know more about that.
I know. It was so interesting.
What was that kind of connection? I do know. Okay, so I'm way, way, way older than you guys. I love how science eventually catches up with intuition, because I can remember in the 70s, the whole patterning thing was a big deal.
I know.
We're all like, what?
Like dogs. Our heads are
crossing. We did. They were just the same side, too. I wish we got that on video.
I know. We can go back and look at it.
Like, I remember that we had a next-door neighbor who had some learning difficulties, right? No language for that back then. Mm-hmm. His intervention was to do these floor exercises. Right? And
really?
And it would be the cross crawling. It would be like all the things that we now call primitive reflexes. Back then was called patterning. Well, everybody thought it was hooey back then. I'll give you resources. But now it's like we have all that research to go back and say, yes, it's brain based. If your brain's not ready to learn, it's not going to absorb the material.
Yes.
Right? And it's all. So I don't know. What was your big takeaway?
My big takeaway was that there are specific primitive reflexes that if they're not integrated, then it can be a factor for dyslexia, dysgraphia, and dyscalculia. It makes total sense, because just like what you just said, if your brain's not ready to learn, it doesn't have that foundation, then it's not going to be able to process information. Mm-hmm. And the course was from Pyramid of Potential, mm-hmm. Kathy Johnson. She's amazing. And probably should just link that in the show notes for everyone and then send it your way. But it was really good. It went through the different diagnoses and then talked about how to work on primitive reflexes for those as well. And then gave other just strategies for those, you know, for dyslexia, and strategies for the classroom and at home and stuff too.
Well, and I think when you take kind of a wide look back on the field of education, because of course that's my background, we've always danced around that. Right? Like with things like brain gym and pool moves. I mean, like there's always been this, like we know there's this huge link between movement and learning. And then I think with the OT community bringing in, it's not just movement, it's these reflexes. Mm-hmm. I think we finally have kind of pinned down, like, all right, there we go. We've always kind of danced around it, but now we're getting
there. Yeah. See, and I think if every single preschool, kindergarten, first grade class just did these exercises every day, what would happen? Would we be out of a job? I mean, I'm fine with that if we are.
There's a lot of things in the world to do. Like, it would be cool. Then we'd have to find all these ways for these creative, capable kids to figure out what they want to do in life.
Yes.
You know, it would be easy for
them. Oh my gosh, it would be incredible.
Yeah.
Right?
So many doors.
I know.
That'd
be a fun research project to do. See what would happen. Yeah. We need to do that.
And it's just, I shouldn't say just because it's not that easy, but it's just, it's education, right? Mm-hmm. It's helping parents know, you know, you gotta be on your tummy, right?
Yes.
You gotta make them commando crawl.
Yes.
You know, you want them to be pushing up. You want them to be singing nursery rhymes. Like, mm-hmm. here are all the things.
There's a reason
why we need those things, and there's a reason why there are certain things that we've done with kids for centuries,
yeah.
right?
Yep.
Because it leads to good stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask a very personal question?
You certainly can.
What tools and strategies did you use with your son?
So
that wasn't as personal as I thought it was going to be.
Oh, what did you think it was going to be?
I don't know. I was like, oh my gosh, Jessica, getting personal over
it's
here.
A personal question.
Question number seven was covered by
my friend. I got like three more.
When we ended up, my son started in public school, and then there was a point in time where we decided to pull out and homeschool. And it makes sense, right? I mean, as mom's sitting here with this background. And so with all of these years of special ed under my belt and my son sitting across the table with his own set of needs, I realized I had never really been taught how to make significant changes in the brain. I had been taught a lot of work in the house. And so I spent about a year training myself in anything and everything that I could possibly get trained in, from reading remediation programs to brain training programs to integrated listening system. I mean, you name it. I mean, I went through all of them and then really kind of combined and put together this very multimodal program for him that benefited him. But I had to learn a lot about how to sequence intervention and how, kind of like a bottom-up rather than a top-down philosophy. And that's kind of when you talk about the sensory system and reflexes and then auditory processing, visual processing. I mean, all that stuff has to be looked at before then you start throwing academics. And then just going back to the really what we know are the research-based programs for dyslexia. And those are the programs that are based off of the Orton-Gillingham methodology, which is very, very specific, very incremental, based on intensity, frequency, and duration, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours a week. And we just put them through the ringers.
Does he appreciate all of that now? I'm sure it was hard, like going through it. Did he know that he struggled? I mean, was he aware of the struggles that he had?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so you were like, we're working on this, dude. We're going hard. It's yes. going to be worth it. And then now as an adult, he's like, okay, thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah. And I was of the school of thought, and every parent feels very differently about this. But I'm of the school of thought of we name it, we claim it, we tame it, right? So
like
we talked about you have this thing called dyslexia. We talked about how his brain works differently than other people's brains. And that makes reading a little bit harder, but it makes it easier to do these other things. And as he got older, we showed those crazy little brain scans. And, you know, he could eventually get to the point where he would say, oh, you know, like he would reverse a word or something. He's like, oh, that's the right brain.
Oh.
I'm like, to me, when you demystify it, right? You're like, this is just what it is, buddy. Just like that's the color green. This is the way your brain reads. And this is what your brain needs to learn how to read. Not to say it doesn't make them mad. Yeah. Not to say it doesn't still have implications. And it's all right. There's still difficulties that he encounters, and that's also to me the beginning of self-advocacy. You know, self-advocacy, you have to understand how you work before you can ask for what you need, right? Okay. So we were always about calling it what it is. It's not an excuse, it's an explanation.
I have a personal question now. Secret question 8. I just feel like it will be helpful for our listeners who are maybe do have a child with dyslexia or they're going through that now. What does he do for a living?
He works in the food service industry. Okay. He's a manager of a restaurant.
Okay.
He did community college, had to take some time. I will be very honest and I will probably tear up a little bit. He struggles with that far more than we do. We are a family where brothers went to college, brothers went to grad school. We have always said, I don't really care how you end up where you end up, just do what you do well. So he struggles with the fact that he didn't do traditional college, but he was not a traditional college person.
Mm-hmm.
He still has to have some workarounds for things like inventory, for some of the number things. We still are at a point where I'm encouraging him to ask for some accommodations, like they have to take some pretty lengthy tests, and he still struggles to take them, you know, food safety, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
He's the manager, and he would not even have to blink an eye at him if he took them orally. But he, you know, he doesn't want to do that. So he's, I mean, it's still a part of his life. Yeah. I don't want to make it sound like it goes away. But he's developed the workarounds, and he loves what he does. And he is an incredible people person. And he's in a great field. He's in the hospitality field. And he can get his team on track, and he can get people encouraged to get numbers up. And, I mean, he's just
awesome.
So he's doing his thing.
Well, and it's like what you said, this is the road we're going, or this is how your brain works, this is how we go. It's just, it's a different path, you know? He's just on a different path. And that's okay to be on a different path.
Yeah. And I think it's harder sometimes for the kids than it even is for the parents. Like, my path for him was, like, I was just singing and dancing when he graduated high school.
Yeah.
It's just like, whoa!
Yes.
But, you know, because there's those years that you feel like you're just pulling them up the mountain.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's working with them, you know, trying to get them to have that their path does not need to look like anybody else's. Like, don't put that on yourself.
Yeah.
Who wants the same path?
Yeah, it's like building that confidence.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, there's some really interesting statistics on individuals with dyslexia, and there's several out there about entrepreneurs, and a very high percentage. I've heard anywhere from 40% to 70% of entrepreneurs identify as having some kind of degree of dyslexia. I just think that's fascinating, right? And it's because you've had to create your own road, right? You've had to create your own workaround. You are an out-of-the-box thinker by the sheer way that your brain processes information, you're unlike others, right? You're unlike the norms. So I think that's really an area where we can tap into and get those really good social skills, and those good leadership skills, and those good creativity skills. And that, you know, I used to tell him, you know, years ago, I'm like, you picked such a great time in history to be dyslexic.
Yeah, right? So true.
Because right? There's so many workarounds.
Yeah.
You push a button and your phone can read the directions to you.
Yes.
I mean, you know, like, it's so easy to work with it rather than fight against it now.
That's so
and so I think that's just kind of the message is it's hard work, but it's good.
I like that. Kind of compensating with social skills and teamwork and leadership and all of those.
Just building on your, building on your strengths instead of focusing on your weaknesses.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's what we want for everyone.
Seriously. I just like, when we have these aha moments, I think about me and like how I got to where I am. Like, I had a super weird backwards path of getting here. I was one of the kids who school didn't come easy for me, but I worked really hard and I was kind of the type A and I wanted to get good grades, but it sure didn't come easy for me. And here I am, a freaking entrepreneur.
You know? See, then I'm the opposite. I like slept through school and still graduated with honors, but then I dropped out of college.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's probably why you guys are such a good team. Mm-hmm.
So
right?
True.
Because you probably have one person who's the calendar girl and one person who's the idea girl.
Yes.
And one person who's the, oh, we can do this and this and this. And the other one's like, yeah, maybe in 2 months, right?
Yes. Oh my God. That's literally
that just described us to the T.
Right? So, and so what is that, right? You guys, it's like marrying, you know, it's like finding the perfect person to marry, right?
Yes.
It's you find somebody who accentuates, brings to you, needs what you have to offer, and you can use what they have to offer.
Exactly.
And
it's so fun.
And I think if we really, I think education is a whole. Mm-hmm. If we would spend more time building up, right, what kids do well, and more time allowing kids to follow individual interests within the curriculum, right? You have to have a curriculum, but there are lots of ways to loosen up within that and let people do their own ways.
Oh my gosh, we could talk about that
I know.
All day.
That's letting kids see who they are.
Okay, let's circle back just a little bit. What are some of the best tools for helping a child with dyslexia?
If you could just like rapid fire a couple.
I think the best tool for helping kids with dyslexia is to remember that their intellect is typically light years ahead of their reading ability. And you never want to, for lack of a better word, dumb down what they're able to learn to match their reading level. If you've got a third grade child who reads on a first grade level, but can understand science on a sixth grade level, teach them sixth grade science, right? Teach them every way that doesn't involve reading. So I think that's one, especially for parents, to advocate that you keep moving ahead intellectually and academically over here while you're working on reading over here, to separate that. Just because your child's behind in reading doesn't mean they're slow.
Gotcha.
Very, very high percentage of kids with dyslexia have above average IQ. And then it's estimated as many as 30-40% can also meet the criteria for giftedness. Mm-hmm. So you have to feed that hungry brain. That's how you get kids with dyslexia in college, right? Because you don't slow down.
Yeah.
So that's the big one, is the mindset of those working with the kids. Then I would say multisensory. Everything needs to be multisensory. Mm-hmm. They need to see it, hear it, say it, do it, touch it, move it, whatever. I always say, you know, rather than asking these kids to read a map, give them a globe, right? Let them spin it. Let everything be three-dimensional. Let everything be real. We do know the research is very heavy on what we call multisensory reading programs. Again, like Wilson, Barton, Horton, Gillingham, and those are very phonetically oriented, but they are very much, they have a lot to do with tapping and tracing and, you know, really involving the body in learning that. So, and then giving kids options of how to show what they know. If you have a child who can ask teachers, what is it that they really want from an assignment with the child? You know, do you really want the child to write the answers, or do you really want to know if they know the answers? Mm-hmm. And if what you want is, if you're looking for mastery of knowledge, there's a lot of ways to show that mm-hmm. without having to pick up a pencil or to read or to whatever. So it doesn't mean that you're going to avoid building those skills, but it means we're not going to penalize you for not having them.
Gotcha. Oh, those are fantastic.
That just actually reminded me, I'm squirrel brained right now. I just watched the movie The Day After Tomorrow.
Oh,
and in the beginning of that movie, the son had just got flunked out from like his math class or something, because he did a quiz or a test and he answered all the questions, but he didn't write out the like the solutions or the problems. He knew the answer, but he got flunked because he didn't write it all out. And it's that same idea. It's like, we can't flunk these kids just because they can't physically show us the work. If they know it in their brain, you know, give it to them.
Well, and I'll share a tough story about my son just real quickly, and that he was a sophomore or junior in high school, had a pretty tough science teacher. It was biology. And he had a biology test coming up. And we studied so hard. And when I say we, I mean we. Like, we worked so hard. And he knew that information inside and out. And this is a good time to insert that if you have kids with dyslexia, the vast majority of the time, it's also going to impact their writing. So he took this test to pick him up in Carline and pick him up after school, and he's just crestfallen. He had just absolutely bombed the test, primarily because of his spelling of all of these terms, right, of photosynthesis and all of these things. And I pulled the car over, and I got him to go inside the school building with me, and I very politely told the teacher, I said, I am not asking you to change his grade, but I'm asking you to give him the test orally so he can show you he knows. And he would have gotten like a 92 if we had done it orally.
Wow.
That's that discrepancy between what we know and what we can get out, mm-hmm. right? What the kiddo with dyslexia, dysgraphia, what they know, and what they can get on paper in a traditional way.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So, dang. Yeah. So did he change his grade?
Well, she gave him half credit.
I know.
I still know where she lives.
Let's go A her out.
Maybe she'll listen to this episode.
When you call her in, if you're all in, in with me. So do it on Halloween and stay with the kids in the neighborhood. I'm all for it.
I love it. She is so much.
You're spicy. I like it.
Yeah. I love it.
Oh, so good. Oh my goodness.
But you know, that's the kind of, it really was more important. But yes, I wanted him to get the knife too. Yes, I did. What I really wanted was for him to know she knew he knew it.
Yes.
Because absolutely. She was not a nurturing person. She was not somebody that was going to work with him. And it was kind of this moment where I wanted
him to know, hey,
I got this, right?
Yeah.
I got it.
Build that
good for you. You're like, yeah. Mama Bear Claws came out. You're like,
oh, good kid. No. But I wanted a good grade too. I worked hard for it.
You're like, we know this.
We know this.
Oh, so good. Bless your heart.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. Well, I do think before we wrap up this interview, you have a ton of resources to offer parents, therapists, educators, whoever's listening. We've got a little bit of everything when it comes to our audience. So where can people find your work, work with you, soak up all that you have to offer?
So I have a slew of webinars on sensationalbrain.com. I have lots and lots. We have one on dyslexia. We have a couple on dysgraphia. Lots in that area. You can also go to LoriBensonAdams.com, which is my website, which gives you my contact information. I do a lot of coaching with parents and helping parents kind of figure out how to advocate. And I do some coaching with kids and helping them learn to advocate. I do a lot of work with high school kids, trying to help them find their voice and figure out how to have those conversations with teachers and those kinds of things.
Awesome.
So, yeah. And if you're a Facebook person, Breakthrough Learning Solutions, Facebook, that's it. I think, yeah.
Perfect.
So good. Oh, you're fantastic. This was so fun.
I know. I love it.
I told you you'd love her. She's great.
She did. She did. It's true.
I was like, this is Lori. She's fantastic. You're just going to get such a big hit.
Well, thank you. And thank you for letting me talk about this. This is obviously a passion area,
yes.
Both professionally and personally for me. And, you know, if there's anything I can do, especially out there for parents, right? You know, been there, done that. Happy to help you walk a little bit of it and figure out what's best for you guys.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you again. We appreciate it. We'll make sure we have all of your contact info, website, Facebook, courses on Sensational Brain. We'll have everything linked in the show notes for people to take advantage of.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lori. Bye. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to All Things Sensory by Harkla. If you want more information on anything we mentioned in the show, head over to harkla.co/podcast to get all of the show notes.
We always have the show notes and links, plus full transcripts to make following along as easy as possible for everyone. If you have follow-up questions, the best place to ask those is in the comments on the show notes or message us on our Instagram account, which is @harkla_family. If you just search Harkla, you'll find us.
Like we mentioned before, our podcast listeners get 10% off their first order at Harkla, whether it's for one of our digital courses, one of our sensory swings. The discount code SENSORY will save you 10%. That code is SENSORY. Head over to harkla.co/sensory to use that code right now so you don't forget.
We're so excited to work together to help create confident kids all over the world and work towards a happier, healthier life.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week. Just a friendly reminder, this is general information related to occupational therapy, pediatrics, and sensory integration. We do not know you or your child, therefore we do not know any specific needs. Therefore, you should always refer back to your pediatrician and occupational therapist for more information.